The Aggies of Utah State have a really good quarterback, but do they have enough pieces to the puzzle to keep up with the Tigers? The Astros will find out who they play Friday. And when you think of the Astros, you think of Verlander, and you think of Bregman, and you think of Altuve. But the guest we have on is the unsung hero of the Stros. We'll go in the trenches with Chris Truax and Michael Hugonen with his picks, including the big one, Auburn in the Swamp to take on the Gators. Today, Hump Day Wednesday, October 2nd, 2019.
The kick, here it comes. Swing and a line drive, base hit right field. Taylor scores from third. Stevenson around third. The ball missed in right field. Rounding third. Coming home is Rendon. He will score, but now caught in a rundown is Soto. He will be tagged out by Moustakas, but that's the third out. Three runs score.
Step in there. I know he's in trouble. He's going to try to attack me. With his fastball, his fastball up, and the slider. I just step in there and try to hit the ball single to the middle. That's what I think in that bat. Hit a single to the middle, ground ball single to the middle, and try to tie the game.
They don't quit until the 27th out is recorded. And honestly, for me, I kind of got used to it. And, you know, we're sitting there and nobody ever thought we were ever done until that last out was. Really, I mean, the dugout was fired up. The guys were fired up. Michael gets hit. And I bet simultaneously, 10 guys screamed, "Here we go." And that's all it took.
Playoff baseball. How about that one? Nationals, 4. Brewers, 3. Juan Soto with the delivery, thanks to an error by rookie right fielder Trent Grisham. And the Nats rally from behind and get it done. They survive and advance. The Brewers season is over. The Nationals get to travel out to Los Angeles now to take on the Dodgers. Tonight, we'll find out who advances in the American League as the Tampa Bay Rays and the Oakland A's get busy in Oakland at Oakland Alameda Coliseum. And the winner will take on the Houston Astros starting on Friday, 1 o'clock, 105, first pitch. We will not have a show on Friday because so we can air the Astros in the playoffs. And why not? Why not? So we'll do our football Friday on a Thursday, and we'll turn it over to the Astros on Friday. And speaking of Astros, you heard me in the open talk about, and justifiably so, Verlander and Gerrit Cole, and you think of Altuve, and you think of the possible MVP in Alex Bregman, but the unsung hero for 5 years in a row now and having his best year yet is ex-LSU Tiger turned relief pitcher for A.J. Hinch, Will Harris. Will Harris will join us in about 8 or 9 minutes. And we'll share his thoughts on this season of the Astros and how he's had the best year of his career. No question about it. Chris Truax will join us. We'll go in the trenches. I hope LSU's not overlooking Utah State. They've got a good quarterback, but do they have all the ancillary pieces that you need to compete on the Power 5 level against a team currently ranked 5th in the country? They got a good quarterback, no doubt, but do they have those guys up front in the trenches? Offensive line, defensive line. Ke'Lavon Chaisson looking better than ever. Might he play in this game? He might. Or they may hold him out just to get ready for this gauntlet that LSU's going to face. After Utah State, they've got Florida. They've got Mississippi State, Auburn, and Alabama. 2 at home and 2 on the road. That's brutal. That is brutal. The Saints opened up as a 6.5-point favorite. It's now shrunk to 3. A lot of that based upon Tampa Bay's performance out in Los Angeles against the Rams when they put up a double nickel to beat the Rams. Shocked the NFL world. They're coming to the Superdome this Sunday at 12 noon. John Hendricks, Forbes Sports, and the Canal Street Chronicles will join us, and we'll talk about the Saints. Teddy Bridgewater's been mediocre, but effective, right? But there's going to come a game that he's going to have to turn it loose, and he's going to put up some numbers because this offense is kind of in a funk. They didn't score a touchdown. They got four field goals, not good in the red zone. That's going to come up and bite you eventually, that and all the penalties. So we'll talk with John Hendricks about that. And then it wouldn't be a Wednesday without Hump Day with Hugen and our good friend from The Athletic. And we'll talk about all the big games. The news coming out of LSU, Leonard Fournette has left the program. He graduated in May. And let me just tell you this. I don't know this to be true, but if I had to make a pretty, what I think, pretty safe prediction, this was a recruiting promise to Leonard Fournette and his family. And this is not a knock on Leonard, but come on. Leonard, what's it going to take to get you to come here? You guarantee me my brother gets a scholarship and gets an education and doesn't have to pay for school. I guarantee you that was part of the deal. Guarantee you. He hadn't touched the ball much. And so therefore I don't blame him. He graduated, just wants to get on with his life and good for him. I have no problems with that in any way, shape or form. 13 touches, 36 yards and a touchdown in four games a season. He always seemed to start off in the first game to get the most touches and then just peters out. So LSU now that opens up the door for John Emery Jr., Tyrion Davis Price. LSU fulfilled their obligation to Leonard Fournette. This is just me saying it. I have no one's told me anything, but I can read between the tea leaves. I really can. This was a promise to the Fournette family as part of his recruitment. You come to LSU, we're going to give you the ball a lot. We're going to try and help you win a Heisman Trophy. We're going to get you to the NFL. And oh, by the way, we'll give your brother a free ride as well. Boom. Done. Done. So there you go with that. So that's, I'm sticking with that one. I still believe that completely. Bill Bildwell, the owner of the NFL's Arizona Cardinals, has passed away at the age of 88 years young. Did a great job for him. It really did. Hate to see that. Hate to see that happen. So we'll see what happens with that organization down the road. It just kind of shows you the smooth transition from the late Mr. Tom Benson to his wife Gail Benson. And I think some would say that Gail has done even a better job than Tom has. She's got a lot of work with, and she has some trusted soldiers that are working side by side with her. But they have been terrific in everything they do. Saints are selling out every game. Pelicans have sold over 12,000 season tickets. They're going to open up the doors to a free showing on Saturday. They'll pack the house on that one. Oh, by the way, today's practice ended. Lonzo Ball up at the top serving up the alley, and Zion Williamson throwing down the oop to close out practice in a little scrimmage. Oh, I can see it happening time and time and time again. Oh, by the way, billboards should be up. Raging Cajun fans, we're going to say it every day. We're going to help Billy Napier. We're going to help this football team that's won four games in a row after the loss to Mississippi State. A couple tough games on the road, including one conference win. We're going to help them everywhere. We're going to spread the word. Pack Cajun Field 1 week from today. Pack it. There's no excuse, no reason not to. It's not like the tickets are that expensive. It's a Wednesday night. Instead of going out to dinner, going to a movie, give your kids a break from the homework, and go watch this team play. Pack the house, or your coach had got an extension down the road that keeps on winning, and some of the bigger schools come calling. Well, why would he stay? If you don't support, you get what you ask for. You really do. So, busy show planned for you and yours today. Looking forward to talking with Will Harris. He's done a tremendous job. The most underappreciated, underrated relief pitcher in baseball. But just ask the Astros how valuable he is to them. Will Harris will join us from Minute Maid Park next here on the Jordy Helfrich Show. So we'll take our first break of the day. More of the Jordy Helfrich Show to come here on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Helfrich Show on 1037 The Game.
Well, the Houston Astros will begin their playoff hopes and aspirations this Friday. They'll take on the winner of tonight's game between the Tampa Bay Rays and the Oakland A's. And when they get started Friday at about 1:05 right here on 1037 The Game, one player that manager A.J. Hinch will rely upon, as he has for 5 years now, is former LSU Tiger. He played it, went to Slidell High, then to LSU, and for the last five seasons has just been tremendous for the Astros in relief in the bullpen, and that's Will Harris, who's kind enough to join us on a very busy day. Will, congratulations on a hell of a season so far.
I appreciate it, Jordy. Thanks for having me.
It's been your best. I mean, my goodness gracious, batters are only hitting 151 off of your curveball this year. You inherited a team-high 27 men on base. You allowed only five to score. That 19% rate is a career low for you. How much fun are you having?
This year was great. You know, I know it kind of name of the game. It starts with staying healthy, and was able to do that. I think I got up, you know, around high 60s in appearances, but only through 60 innings. You know, AJ kind of used me well and put me in big spots, and you know, then kind of got me out of there and was able to keep my own fresh throughout the year. So I was glad I made it through healthy. Now we got a little rest period here, 4 days. Yeah. I'm gonna throw a little live to some hitters today and get prepared for Friday.
You've held opponents scoreless in 28 of your last 31 appearances, and tell me, against the Angels on the last Friday of the regular season, you threw the immaculate inning, 9 pitches for 3 strikeouts. Huh? Tell me about what that was like.
Yeah, that one was pretty neat. I don't think I've ever done that before at any level. And so I felt pretty good warming up in the bullpen and went out there and, you know, luckily was kind of facing the bottom of the order, kind of some fringe guys, you know, kind of call ups late in the year kind of thing. And so it all kind of worked out for me and feeling good and making some pitches. So it was pretty neat. You know, after I punched the first guy on 3 pitches, I was like, I feel pretty good today. Like, I think I might strike out all 3, you know, and then struck out the second guy on 3 pitches. And then at that point I was like, okay, well, I got a shot at this, knowing the immaculate inning thing. And actually the last guy I threw a ball, I bounced a curveball that he swung at, and I was trying to throw it for a strike because I didn't want to throw a ball, obviously. Yeah. And I slipped on my plant foot and kind of pulled the ball low, but he chased it and swung at it. And I was like, ooh, got away with one there, you know, and kind of kept it going. So it was a lot of fun for everybody in the dugout. A lot of fun for me, obviously, too. So it was pretty neat.
The first immaculate inning for the Astros in 15 years. You said it was fun for the guys in the dugout. Y'all seem to have fun. I know winning makes everybody happy, and 107 wins is unbelievable, but you guys seem to really genuinely get along.
Yeah, it's been that way since my first day here back in 2015 in spring training. It's, you know, we just kind of had a good group of guys, a good core group of guys that are all still here, and we've added some really good core, you know, guys to that core, and guys come in and they just want to be a part of it. And it's been great. Even guys that leave, you know, we FaceTime guys all the time, ex-players that played with us, and we're still still friends and just as close with them as we were when they were here. So it's a really good clubhouse. We have a lot of fun. Like you said, winning obviously breeds that. I think if you're losing 100 games, there's not as much fun and light air around. So it's a little bit different nowadays, and we don't take it for granted.
Will Harris, a true pro's pro. But take me back, because you weren't always a pitcher. In fact, if I recall, you didn't pick up a ball to pitch until your senior year at LSU. What happened? And whoever was the genius behind that, tell them thank you.
Yeah, I mean, I pitched my whole life. Pitched in high school. Had a lot of success pitching in high school. I went to LSU as a two-way player. Me and my brother both did. Now, Clay pitched his freshman year, was a freshman All-American as a pitcher, and then he switched over and just hit the last 3 years. I went into fall practice doing both, but we had a lot of upperclassmen that were, we were leaning on pretty heavily back in those days in 2003 and 2004. And so the pitching kind of got put on the back burner for a while, and then I had some elbow injuries and things like that. And then going into my senior year, we had lost a few guys that we were kind of counting on to come back. One of them had signed, one of them decided to go to medical school. And so we were kind of really thin on pitchers, and Smoke was like, hey, I'm going to need you to start pitching again. And at that point, the hitting wasn't going too well. So I was all in on pitching. And so, it was pitching to me always kind of came natural. I always, my whole life, kind of had an idea of where the ball was going and how I wanted to execute pitches. And so I was kind of able to pick it back up pretty quickly that year. And then, kind of ran with it, ran into some more elbow problems. But thank goodness I was able to kind of showcase myself enough that season to get a shot in professional baseball.
Let me brag a little bit on Will Harris. Over the last five seasons, only three relievers have totaled at least 280 innings on the mound and kept an ERA below 2.45. Aroldis Chapman at 2.16, Kenzie Jansen at 2.44, and yourself at an ERA of a scintillating 2.36. You said prior to the season that you were going to put more of a focus on moving the ball around. Easier said than done, I would think.
Yeah, when you pitch in this league, especially when you pitch in the same division like I have for the last 5 years, there's a lot of the same hitters you're facing. You're facing these guys a bunch of times in the same season, sometimes a bunch of times in the same week. And you start multiplying and compounding that over years and years and years. You kind of, even if you have success, you kind of have to start to, maybe open the playbook up a little bit and, keep guys guessing, that's kind of what I meant when I said, move the ball around. Kind of don't just kind of stay in one spot and do what I've always done and been successful with it because, hitters figure that out. And nowadays with the way the ball's jumping out of the ballpark and, just the amount of home runs that are being hit, try and keep guys on their toes. You stay in one spot too long in this league, you're going to get hurt. So,
yeah. What a year. You got two teammates that are vying for the Cy Young Award, and both very deserving of it, and you got another LSU Tiger who might be the MVP in Bregman. It's been quite an individual accomplishing year along with all the team goals that y'all have set.
Yeah, and even so, Jordan Alvarez, I'm pretty sure, is going to run away with the Rookie of the Year. So, it's been a kind of a long list of accomplishments that and kind of boxes we've been checking as the year has gone on, and now it's you're in a tournament now. It's tournament baseball now, something that's different than the normal grind of 162. So. Everybody wants to bring their best self every single day to the park and, know that, look, we're not going to go undefeated in these playoffs, more than likely. So we're going to have to overcome some adversity. But hopefully we play our best brand of baseball this next month and, get out of here with 11 wins and raise another trophy. It's fun.
Who have you had the most success in pitching against, Tampa Bay or Oakland?
I don't really know. I mean, I've pitched a lot against Oakland over the years, obviously being in the AL West. Tampa Bay has quite a few lefties in their lineup, which I seem to face a lot of as a good matchup for myself. So, I've been asked that question a few times over the last 48 hours, and I really don't know. They both bring different things to the table. They're built differently as a team. So, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing who wins tonight, and then we'll prepare tomorrow with, you know, meetings and scouting report stuff and come up with a game plan we feel like is, gives us the best chance, and then we'll just roll it out, see how it goes.
Yeah, just when you think you see it all, you see what happened with the Nationals last night. What a wild, crazy finish that is. It's playoff baseball. Anything can happen. But one thing for sure, it's October and you still got that goatee, man. You, how many times did you think about shaving that thing? I know your wife didn't like it.
Yeah. You know, it's for me, in playoff years, I got to start like months in advance. So, you know, like I said, I've told people just – kind of started and wasn't giving up any runs, so I figured, hey, you know, we'll keep it on the chin for a little while, and at any point that it bothers me, I'm 10 feet away from the bathroom and can go shave it off, so it's not too much of a commitment. But as long
it's
as
quite
as
a compliment when you, yeah, keep winning games, leave that sucker on there, man. It's quite a compliment when you hear people at your level that appreciate what you do call you the most underrated relief pitcher in baseball. I get the feeling that that doesn't bother you, that that's okay. You just want to win games, and you and A.J. Hinch seem to be joined to the hip, and that's always a good thing.
Yeah, you know, I didn't start playing baseball to be famous or to, you know, make a lot of money. I just did it because I wanted to be good. And so if people think that I'm pretty good, then I'm doing my job.
You're better than just pretty good, my friend. All LSU is proud of you. All the best in the postseason starting this Friday. We'll find out later on today who you actually will be playing. But thanks for the time on a busy day, and stay healthy, man, and good luck.
I appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
All right. That's Will Harris, kind enough to join us. Again, the Astros will take on the winner of the Tampa Bay Rays and the Oakland A's. That first game Friday, right here on 103.7 The Game, with the first pitch a little bit after 1 o'clock. So stay tuned for all of that. So we'll be back with more of the Jordy Helfrich Show here on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Tax relief.
There's only one place you'll find all the movers, shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Huntberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
Time to talk Tigers. Brought to you each and every Wednesday by True Lodging RV Park. The perfect RV park. 996 Main Street in Hackberry, Louisiana. They've got sewer and water hookups, on-site laundromat, high-speed internet, bathroom and shower facilities. Restaurants and grocery stores are nearby for all the natural gas plants, and there are five of them very close by. If you're looking for a place to go, that's the place to go, True Lodging RV Park. If you don't believe me, what did Jessica Bowen have to say? Beautiful campground, very friendly owners and campers, clean bathrooms, level and clean sites. Active campground. We like seeing people out walking around and occasionally visiting with other campers. The Wi-Fi and cell service are absolutely fantastic. We will definitely be back. Just one of the many testimonials to True Lodging RV Park, Hackberry, Louisiana. Chris Jack Truex, former LSU Tiger offensive lineman, college football coach, businessman, joins us now to talk about the Tigers. Chris, did you enjoy the bye week, my friend?
No, I was a little off because I'm like you, I'm a football junkie, and I love to watch, you know, the Tigers play. But there was enough games to kind of keep me involved, and so it wasn't that fun with much with the Tigers. I had a good time though, you know, watching the Saints and the Cowboys.
This game kind of reminds me, the Utah State coming in, 11 o'clock kickoff. This reminds me of a game back in the day, and see if you agree with me on this one. Utah State has what Ed Orgeron, everybody says, is a really, really good quarterback. There was a team back in the day called Miami of Ohio that came in with a really good quarterback. His name was Ben Roethlisberger, came into Tiger Stadium, and he was good. He just didn't have all the other pieces around him that you need to play against a team the caliber of LSU. Is that what you see in this game, a really good quarterback, but maybe not enough other pieces? Or do you think Utah State is going to put up a really good fight against LSU.
You know what I like about Utah State? They've got a seasoned football team, Jordan, that's playing on the road. And I don't know if you and some of your listeners remember last year when Utah State went into Auburn and pushed Auburn around, literally. I mean, they looked like the better team for about 3.5 quarters, and then Auburn found a way to, you know, to get it done. So they're not going to be enamored or shocked and awed in the LSU environment. LSU's going to have to wake up early. You know, it's not what we do in Baton Rouge. We're not all about 11 a.m. kickoffs. So, and then, you know, with these guys from Utah coming down, the time change and so forth, it's going to be an interesting matchup. But anytime you've got a quarterback that basically has the pedigree of Utah State's quarterback, you know, you got a chance to have a competitive game on Saturday.
It'll be 10 o'clock their body clock time that Utah State's playing. They're going from 50 degrees in Logan, Utah, to the heat and humidity of Tiger Stadium. That's got to be a difference maker, right?
It'd be straight misery. I mean, you know, they got to, you know, Samoans and Tongans aren't used to that right now. They're used to that Utah climate and that different elevation, and obviously, you know, a little different breathing apparatus. It'd be like our guys going up to Utah, getting used to that altitude. Well, now these boys are coming down to sea level, and it's going to be a different, you know, situation for Utah State.
We're talking with Chris Truax, brought to you by True Lodging RV Park, Hackberry, Louisiana. The obvious goal is to win. What do you think the goal of the coaching staff in this particular game is besides winning?
Well, obviously, you know, that's the number one. Whoever your opponent is, you got to make sure you keep your foot on their throat and get out of there with a victory. You know, I would think they want to see more production from their defensive line. And Utah State's a shotgun offense, a lot of quick throws, a lot of rub routes, little mesh routes, a lot of underneath stuff that LSU saw from, you know, University of Texas type offense. You know, they're an up-tempo deal. I don't think LSU wants to have their defense on the field for 80-plus plays, looking for more three and outs, maybe getting some more consistency from a young man like Grant Delpit, who's, in my opinion, you know, plays better closer to the ball in a strong safety or weak safety role instead of being basically at the top of the pyramid at the free safety. He's a ball hawk type guy that likes to be close to the line of scrimmage. You know, I think getting Ed Ingram back in the offensive line, kind of seeing how they're going to put their best five offensive linemen out there this week. I think they'll mix and match some of their linemen right there. Love to be able to see some of these young running backs get some more opportunities at some meaningful downs. And I think we know what we're getting out of our starting running back, and that's good. I think he's a productive player, but we don't really have a game changer at that position, which, you know, we're so used to having a ground and pound attack, and now we're, you know, four wides, one back, slinging it all over the yard.
Yeah, Chris Truax, kind enough to join us. The Tigers had the bye week. They've got this one. Were you surprised that CBS opted for Alabama and Texas A&M for their 2:30 game instead of LSU and Florida?
Well, you know, who's the alpha in the SEC? It's Alabama. Alabama's probably telling CBS, this is what games we're going to allow you to have of ours. And then CBS will be like, okay, got it, we understand. Am I right? I mean, that's the way I look at it. CBS is blessed to have Alabama's game.
Maybe so. Maybe so. This defense has to get better. Work with me on this. I know this is something a coach, and you were a coach, hates to hear, but you were a player. I was a player in a different sport. I just really believe this LSU defense is going to rise to the occasion when the big boys come to town. I think they've kind of, in the back of their mind, it's human nature. Man, we're better than this team. We're just going to beat them. And sometimes you don't play your best that way. You'd love to, but you can't get kids these days to play their very best for 12 Saturdays in the fall. You just can't. So I'd rather them play poorly now against teams they can beat, but I think they'll rise to the occasion against the good teams. Does that make sense?
No, of course. I mean, it's all psychological, but, you know, you'd like to get better each and every week or find individual positions that are getting stronger and stronger as the season progresses. We're going into week five now, and I think, you know, seeing some of the weaknesses on our defense, I think that gives Utah State a little more confidence, feel like, hey, we can play with these guys. You know, obviously the telltale tape is going to be, you know, when Florida comes to town. And that's where we're going to be able to go, you know, with Florida and Auburn. And we'll see how good really LSU is when you're playing and recruiting the same type of profiled student athletes.
I'm with you. Chris Truax, I want to get your thought. You're a lineman, but you know football. And Ed Orgeron talked about the tackling or lack thereof from LSU. He says it's more about footwork and angles. So kind of layman's terms, what's he mean by that?
Well, it's all about getting leverage on the ball. You know, Jordy, from what I see, and it's all over the country, a lot of these guys, instead of working on form tackling, they work on knocking out the ball, punching out the ball, stripping the ball. Yeah. So they're kind of holding on, trying to make an offensive play, because basically turnovers are a huge statistic on who wins and loses football games, but they're losing a lot of their technique when it comes to those form tackles. So, you know, it's, you know, you're trying to get your head across the defender, trying to get your body in front of his body and so forth, not make an arm tackle, but make body-on-body tackles. And, you know, every now and then you are going to get run over, and you're going to run somebody else over. But I think some of the fundamentals get tossed to the side because, you know, a lot of these players or systems are like NFL systems. They don't want to bloody up too much during the week because they know you've got a gauntlet coming down the hill. And are they willing to maybe live with a little less, you know, fundamentals and by keeping maybe your better athletes on the field?
Yeah, makes sense. How would you grade LSU's offensive line to date and the job that Jeff Grimes has done?
Well, you know, Jeff left us last year. He's up at BYU now.
I mean, you're right.
But we've got you've got Coach Craig in there, and also he's got an assistant coach as well too. You know, I'd give him maybe about a B. You know, and maybe a low B. I don't think we have that congruency or rhythm with our five best players out there at this point, Jordy. I think getting the Ed Ingram kid back, he is a potential, you know, first round great player, but he had some personal issues that they got put away and got to practice and they talk about how great a shape he's in, but you know, as I do, you know, workout shape and playing shape are two different things. So, you know, hopefully they'll work him back in the mix. I'd like to be able to see maybe McGee over at the right tackle spot and Ingram back at that left guard spot. I feel good about I think our left tackle, Sadiq Charles, is as good as anybody in the country. Sometimes he puts himself in a bind because he out-athletes the defensive ends. That's what kind of athletic ability he has.
Okay.
But we're getting a lot of pressure. I'd like to see our running backs step up and meet the linebackers square and really, you know, being able to use their hands instead of trying to cut block in the backfield. So just fundamental stuff right there. I think they got some kids that are really competing, though.
That's a $5 fine for me for the inappropriate, incorrect offensive line coach. I'll put it in the kitty, and the kitty keeps growing day by day because of that. Leonard Fournette left the program. I think he said he just wanted to get on with his life. I personally think that he got his degree, and LSU's recruiting promise to Leonard Fournette was accomplished. What do you think about that?
Oh, no, I think you hit it spot on. And I think, too, they probably had a meeting letting Leonard know that, listen, you're not our number two running back. You might not be our number three running back. You hear you accomplished your goals. Congratulations. There's plenty of places for him to go have a productive career wherever he wants to go. But, you know, that the stable's kind of full of some young talent. We know what Leonard's production is, but it's about time to get the, you know, the number one running back in the country, kind of cut him loose a little bit on a Saturday.
Yeah, I'm with you completely. All right. The other big game in the SEC is Auburn at Florida. We'll see both of them in the very, very near future. What are your thoughts on that one?
I tell you what, Auburn might be the best team in the SEC right now, Jordy. I tell you, they look like a complete package right now. And it all starts, I think, with their defensive line controlling the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
I know Florida had, the Felipe Franks get injured at quarterback. The other young man's gone in. What's going to be interesting to me, Jordy, is Florida has two of the top five sackers in the SEC. And we don't have one, I don't think, in the top ten. All right? So it's going to, be able to, those matchups and so forth will be kind of a showing of what our offensive line can handle as the SEC, grinds out.
I'm with you. Should be a good one. And then we'll really find out about this LSU football team. Primetime game next Saturday. Hopefully everything will go according to plan. Hopefully we'll get these some of these players back healthy again. And hopefully everything will continue rolling on. Keep this offense hot. Sometimes you don't want to take a break when you're on a roll, but I think everybody was due for a break last week. So the weather's getting ready to turn, man. So True Lodging RV Park is going to be the place to go. And you also, if you don't have an RV, you can get one from you, can't you?
You sure can. I lease them out. I sure do. The brand new units. All bills paid for a monthly rate. We don't do those on a daily or weekly rate, but we have those for a monthly rate, which a lot of these guys, will come in there for a year contract type stuff. So, we do have those options. Thanks for bringing that up.
Okay. Well, that's what I'm here for, man. I'm trying to do my job, as you always do your job. Hey, 11 o'clock kickoff doesn't faze you. You stay hot. You're always ready.
Yeah. That's my workout. We've been working on a washing machine for 2 weeks now. That's how ready I am.
Chris Truax joins us each and every Wednesday. Thank you, my friend. Safe travels. We'll see you Saturday.
You got it. 10-4. Take care. Go Tigers.
All right, there you go. That's brought to you by True Lodging RV Park in Hackberry, Louisiana. Kalavon Chaisson back on the practice field. Looked really, really good. Maybe, just maybe, he'll get into the fray. Again, a really good quarterback, but does he have enough pieces to the puzzle? I don't think he does. I think LSU continues on their roll. They're 23 and a half. Let's see. What are they? 20.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
28-point favorites right now. And the over-under, the over-under, 72 and a half. That's a fun one. 72 and a half. Okay. We're going to take a quick time out here. More of the Jordy Helpert Show after these very important messages right here on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game.
Here's three pieces of advice to live by. Never play cards with a guy whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
All right, don't forget about our Twin Peaks Pro Pick'em Challenge. If you want to test your football knowledge with Acadiana Sports Station, make sure to get your picks in for Week 5 at 1037thegame.com and try and beat the best with the Twin Peaks Pro Pick'em Challenge. And we've got that heart ticket giveaway as well. Man, if you want to win a pair of tickets to see Rock and Roll Hall of Famers Heart and Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, then just text ANN, A-N-N, that's A-N-N, to 68683 for your chance to win a pair of tickets to see them live this Saturday at the Cajun Dome. Once again, text ANN, A-N-N, to 68683, and you may have a chance to win a pair of tickets to see Hart, Joan Jett, and the Blackhearts this Saturday at the Cajun Dome. Pack the house, Raging Cajuns. Pack the house. I'm just saying, pack the house. Wednesday, pack the house. Let's get Cajun feel to the rafters. For the first time in forever and a day. This team deserves it. Go get it done. I saw something interesting, and I thought, because I've been preaching this forever, but Dr. James Andrews, an LSU grad, and he is the orthopedic to the Stars. anybody who's anybody gets an opinion from Dr. James Andrews. And he gave some advice at a forum that he was speaking to. And he said, for young athletes and parents, listen carefully, young athletes and parents, number one, don't specialize in one sport until your senior year in high school. Play them all, because all the sports will make you better at the sport that you're really, really good at. So don't specialize until your senior year in high school. And, man, give yourself a break. Take 2 months off every year. Just get away from it all. Get away from it all. I think that's great advice, and I wish that more parents would do that instead of, you know, these. Every sport, soccer, basketball, baseball, volleyball, there are all so many of these specialty teams and travel teams and elite teams, and the kids never stop. Never stop. And one, they either get hurt, or two, they get burned out. Remember, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. You want to be peaking at the right time. And if your child, son or daughter, is good enough, that college education, that college scholarship will come. Very, very few get it, but it'll come. So I thought that was great advice by Dr. James Andrews. Peterbilt of Louisiana is also great advice, because they are America's premium quality heavy-duty truck manufacturer since the company started back in 1939. Peterbilt has maintained this position as the class of the industry by concentrating on delivering high performance, low maintenance, and extremely durable vehicles that pay off in low operating costs, driver productivity, and a high resale value. It's the dream of every trucker to own a Peterbilt. Lafayette, Lake Charles, Baton Rouge, New Orleans, we have offices in all four cities. We have new sales, used sales. We lease. We have every part imaginable in our parts department, and we always have a service department just in case. Remember, the dream of every trucker is to own a Peterbilt. When LSU travels, they get their equipment to the next stadium on the road by driving a Peterbilt truck. Get the best. Peterbilt of Louisiana. Coming up, hour number two, hot topics as always. John Hendricks will talk about, should we worry about Tampa Bay? Because they had their one shining moment, right? And they went to L.A. and just put up 55 on the Rams. Scary, but do they come back down to earth? And is it time for Teddy Bridgewater to step up and get it going a little bit? And then Michael Huguenin will give us all the picks on this week of college football. The big one, Auburn at Florida. We'll get his thoughts as well. Hour number one is history. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more of the Jordy Helfrich Show here. Hour number two on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans.
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
It's hour number two of two on a Wednesday, the second day of October, the year 2019. Happy birthday, Big Red Hultberg, my dad. Having a great day. I love you to death. And keep on keeping on, Dad. You're the best. No question about that. Busy second hour planned for you and yours, brought to you by ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, you just can't shop right at all. Their Buku Rewards program is in effect. And if you're a member, you're going to get all kinds of sweet deals from them My goodness gracious, you can't beat it with a stick. They are spectacular. You can get so many discounts on all their products throughout the store. A dollar off their sausage biscuit. Homemade boudin from Rascals Cajun Express. $5 off there. You can get spirits at a discounted price. So become a Buku Rewards member at ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets. You just can't beat it. Florida and Auburn are the big game this weekend in the SEC and nationally. You know, they'll play Saturday for the first time since 2011. Gus Malzahn, in his 11th season in the SEC, will make his very first trip to the Swamp. It's time to change how the SEC schedules so it feels more like a league. Somehow, some way, let's drop one of these rental wins and let's play another conference game. Come on, let's go. And speaking about let's go, let's go take our walk around the sports water cooler. CD, do your thing.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
Well, let's hope that tonight's AL wildcard game is as dramatic as last night's NL wildcard game. How about that one, CD?
That was an absolute wild one, and I loved every minute of it, just seeing how everything was going back and forth. Even though if you were on social media last night kind of keeping tabs on that ball game, Jordy, you were less than happy because of the fact you couldn't get any videos, photos, nothing on Twitter because for whatever reason, Twitter just decided to have itself a bad night on wild card night on Tuesday.
Well, I didn't follow Twitter. I'm glad I didn't. I just watched the game, and nobody's given credit to the guy that I think deserves it the most. I know that Juan Soto had the hit, and poor rookie Trent Grisham had the error, but Steven Strasburg, without him, the Nationals are done. He was terrific in relief. Max Scherzer couldn't find the strike zone, gave up two home runs, but Strasburg settled them down and kept them in the game, so that was huge. Who you got tonight, the Rays or the A's?
I want to see the Tampa Bay Rays get into the AL wild card, but I said it yesterday. I feel like the Oakland A's could come up with the upset. I think a lot of it has to do with what I was hearing you talk about with Chandler Rome yesterday, and that was about the fact that this lineup, 1 through 9, it's definitely tough to kind of get through. So I think the A's could wind up coming away with the win and being able to advance to the ALDS, which could wind up helping out the Astros when you think about it because of the fact they've played each other so many times over the course of a season. Yeah. That could be absolutely huge. But flipping on it over, Jordy, I saw this pop up earlier today, and I want to get your thoughts on this. Penny Hardaway definitely got a lot of hype around him, and he's saying they're going to win a national championship after finishing fifth in the AAC. Bold prediction from the man himself?
Well, what's Penny supposed to say? everybody, he's just more brazen about it. He's going to have to get some better players, obviously, and he thinks he can at Memphis. So we'll see how far that little Penny and all that stuff about his NBA career goes. I don't see it happening, but we'll see. We'll see. We saw him play firsthand against LSU last year, and they hustle. They play hard, but he's got to get better talent, a lot better talent.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens with them this season. Flipping on over to the NFL, apparently Steven Gostkowski having surgery done for the year. Not exactly a great way to kind of – it's going to be hard to find somebody to fill that void for the New England Patriots now.
They need a kicker. I don't know what they're going to do on that one. Can they make a trade for Adam Vinatieri again and get him back and bring out the snowplows or something? I mean, I don't know what they're going to do. They'll find some. I got an idea for him. There's a guy that used to kick field goals for LSU by the name of Cole Tracy. He can't kick off, but he can make field goals. So maybe give him a tryout and see what he can do.
I wouldn't be surprised if he's willing to put his hat in that ring because I can about imagine Cole Tracy not doing a whole heck of a lot. But it makes you wonder. That'd be huge
waiting
to see him.
Waiting for the XFL.
Waiting for the XFL. I love it, Jordy.
He's waiting for the XFL. Everybody's waiting for the XFL. Everybody.
I think just about everybody. And I saw this pop up earlier. And I just think it's absolutely ridiculous. Because you saw on Saturday night when the Auburn player almost destroyed Mississippi State's live Bulldog mascot over the weekend. Apparently, PETA jumping in on the action. It feels like this should have happened already, but now they want the Bulldog mascot to be retired. Come on, man. I feel like that Bulldog, much like Ugga, probably is treated better than some humans.
No question. The greatest was, I think it was an Auburn player got too close to Ugga, and Ugga tried to take a bite out of his shoe or whatever. So I'm not going to get into the political realm of PETA. I'm all about taking care of animals and protecting animals. I've got a dog. I love my dog. It's like a family member. It's like one of my children. But stay out of all the, quit protesting and stay out of all this stuff. Just stop it, please. I miss Mike the Tiger going around Tiger Stadium, to be honest with you. That stopped forever, but the games keep going on. But I miss that. I miss that roar and all that stuff. And they used to have it right by the opposing team's locker room when they'd come out on the field, and those players would look at that Tiger and go, oh, my God, what have we gotten ourselves into? But anyway, I miss that.
I think we all miss it, Jordy. And just before we wrap up Hot Topics, with the big headline around the area is without a doubt what's going on, Leonard Fournette leaving the program. You surprised at that, Jordy, or is this going to be kind of a trend where you see certain players that have already graduated, wrapping up their collegiate career, and they want to play in four games to possibly get to get in that grad transfer portal?
Leonard Fournette did what he came for to school, and that was to get his degree. He wasn't first string. He wasn't second. He wasn't third. He wasn't even fourth. He wants to get on with his life. Does that mean he wants to play football somewhere else? Or does he just want to get out and go to Jacksonville and work for his brother? Who knows? But, I've said it before. I'll say it again. I think that was a recruiting promise to the family. Leonard, you come sign LSU. We'll take care of your brother. And they did. Got him his degree. And now he can get on with his life. There's your Hot Topics for the day, brought to you by Cajun Chef Hot Sauce, the best on the planet, because they use the finest spices, the finest peppers, and they've been doing it for nearly 90 years. So do yourself a flavor. Get a bottle of Cajun Chef Hot Sauce or bring it with you wherever you go, because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. Saints, upset alert. Tampa Bay coming to town. Got to get ready. John Hendricks talks about it next.
Listening to 1037 The Game on your Amazon Echo is easy. Just enable the Alexa skill for 1037 The Game on the Alexa app from your mobile device. Just say, Alexa, ask 1037.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on 1037 The Game.
All right, let's talk a little New Orleans Saints with our good friend John Hendricks from Forbes Sports and Canal Street Chronicles. Back-to-back wins in Seattle and at home against Dallas, and never once did we really talk about the offense that much. It was defense, it was special teams, but a win is a win. John, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. And yeah, you're absolutely right. Win's a win. You'll take it however you can get it. So that defense was 2 weeks have been really impressive.
Is it possible for Teddy Bridgewater to be, kind of remarkable and lackluster both at the same time? There's going to be a game where they need more out of him, right?
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm feeling, right, is especially against the Buccaneers. The team that just hung 55 on the Rams, probably an anomaly, but, look, you're going to have to trade some punches with the Bucs, being that's a division rival and such. And, look, I think Bridgewater, he had some moments where he probably could have hit some things. And, again, we go back to last week talking about it, how Drew Brees' advice was, hey, we just need you to take completion. That's kind of the best advice he gave him. If you see a completion, take a completion. So, I like how he hasn't totally forced things there, but at the same time, they have got to do some things creatively to kind of open up the offense. stretch the field a little bit. And, you know, most importantly, they got to limit the mistakes on offense with some of these penalties.
No question. Snap counts, holding. Sean Payton said that you got to execute without putting yourself back in 3 out of our 12 drives a game. He said it's been crazy. It's been ridiculous, honestly. Who's to blame for that?
Well, look, I think some of the calls are a little iffy. And, again, I'm not trying to say that from a Saints perspective.
I agree.
Look, I think there's a lot that have gone, you know, again, case in point, you look at the Dak Prescott slide and you get a flag for that, and then you have Bridgewater in almost the same exact situation. He doesn't get a flag for something like that. It's just you got to be a little bit more consistent with the officiating. Some of the other penalties, like DeMario Davis, that's to happens the same way. Tyron Smith virtually hurts Trey Hendrickson on his neck and makes him leave the game, and he doesn't get called. So sometimes that's how it is. But, you know, I think my biggest beef was that a lot of those calls were coming from the back judge and not any of the guys that were up front. So I don't know if you have the best angle there, but, look, they're going to get it cleaned up. Sean Payton's already talked about that. You know, they just got to end up playing better and whatever the rules are, you know, you can't do too much to change them. But at the same time, the Saints are on a pace that's not typical of their trend from the last couple of years on how they do offensively.
Yeah, no question. Didn't score a touchdown and still figured out a way to win. I'm kind of wondering about Latavius Murray. Hadn't touched the ball that much. You know, he's trying to fill in that Mark Ingram role of a year ago. He's not smelling the field nearly as much as Ingram did, nor having the impact that Ingram did. Any concerns there?
You know, again, we talked about it last week. I think they got to find a way to get him going. And I guess it's tough in a way when you have Alvin Kamara doing some of the things that he's doing on the field. It's tough to keep him off the field. But between him and Jared Cook, again, first quarter of the season, probably not the grade you want to give somebody, a free agent, acquisitions like them. I don't think they made nearly the impact that everybody thought they would. I would look more in the back half of the season and, you know, down the stretch when it matters most in the playoffs and such. But, look, they got to find some creative ways to get him the ball and just most importantly just get him in because, you know, the first game against the Texans, he had that really good touchdown run, but kind of not been present since. So, you know, he's a very talented running back. He's got a great offensive line in front of him. I think it's probably more not having Drew Brees in the lineup that may be hurting him a little bit. But, again, you got to make do with what you got, and you got to make it work somehow.
The Saints opened up as 6.5-point favorites over Tampa Bay. Today it's only 3 points. What's going on there?
Well, it's a division game, so, I mean, you know, look, I think obviously we know what happened last year. The Buccaneers came into town week one, and they were able to just absolutely slaughter the Saints in the secondary and such, and that's not really common, and I think some people are drinking the Bruce Arians Kool-Aid there, and maybe Jameis Winston is a little bit better than some have given him credit for, but, you know, at the end of the day, they're very talented. They do a lot defensively. They can be scored on, but offensively, Chris Godwin and Mike Evans are a very underrated pair. Evans is a very good receiver. So is O.J. Howard. So you've got a lot of weapons that could potentially move the ball. You know, look, I think being that the Saints are playing again at home and they got a lot of film that they watched and they did not like, I really feel good about their chances to just, you know, blow the doors open, and we'll kind of see what we've been waiting for all the time.
I'm with you. I'm kind of glad Tampa Bay had that game against the Rams because they generally do one of those games a year where you go, what? Well, Tampa Bay, really? So I'm glad they kind of got that out of the way. I am kind of a Arians fan. I'm curious to see how they handle success now as compared to always coming in with failure.
Yeah, look, I mean, look, I think the Bucs have been a team that we've said for, I think, the past several years that they have a pretty good offseason on paper, and everybody's like, oh, this is the year the Buccaneers do something. This is the year the Buccaneers do something. Didn't get it done with Dirk Cotter. I think with Bruce Arians in the mix, he has found some ways to, you know, make it look better. But, you know, let's just look at it a little bit more. You know, you get blown out week one, don't make too much of that. They beat a Panthers team. Cam Newton looked pretty awful. They should have beat the Giants, but they didn't after kind of a fluky type thing. And then, you know, the Rams game, this is sometimes how it goes, right? So I think they're kind of a Jekyll Hyde team here. Look, I think the Saints are going to do what they do best in this game, and that's going to force the quarterback to have to beat them. So I think they're going to do great against the run again and try to force Jameis Winston to beat them, and I think that's the best-case scenario here.
I think John Hendricks, Forbes Sports, Canal Street Chronicles, three-game swing coming up. And you know, you only look at the one you're about to play, but Tampa's at home. Then you got to go to Jacksonville. You got to go to Chicago. This is the most important one of all three for a variety of reasons. One, as you said, is a divisional game. It's a home game, and I'm not so sure you go into Chicago and go up against that defense and come back with a W. So this one's critical.
Yeah, look, I mean, you know, you had told me, given the Brees situation and all things considered, I think coming out of September, the hardest part of the schedule at 3-1 is really a godsend for this team, if you will. And now you got a little bit of breathing room, but easily I could see them splitting some of these games in October, which is going to open up things for the Panthers if they keep putting it together, the Buccaneers. And, you know, look, November is really the meat and potatoes where you got all the division opponents in that month. So, look, I think if you're going to slide any time, this is the time that you're going to definitely do it. But Chicago is going to be a tough place to play. They're not unbeatable. You know, I would be, you know, the way Drew Brees is rehabbing, I honestly think he's going to try to be ready for that game. But, you know, I doubt he'll go with that particular. Just because he's just, you know, you see him on the sideline. He's absolutely distraught. He does not want to be on the sideline. And, you know, I think it's a stretch personally, but at the same time, the way he's built and the way he's wound competitively, look, I wouldn't be surprised if something like that happens or at least gets talked about. But overall, Chicago is definitely the one that you look at. They should potentially go 3-1, and when you look at it, all things considered. But, you know, look, one game at a time, division game, you definitely got to win all your division games, win your division first. That's always been the goal since day one.
Yeah, special teams has been phenomenal. I'm hoping that Dennis Allen and the secondary coaches are telling Marshawn Lattimore that Mike Evans is the greatest receiver in football and building him up. He just seems to play better against the better wide receivers, and I'm so glad he does.
Yeah, look, I think they did a great job, and I think they were kind of hinted on it last week, right, is that they were playing a lot more zone the first three opponents and kind of went into man coverage. I think that was the expectation. And look, anytime you can stop Ezekiel Elliott and, you know, you can sit here and make excuses that Amari Cooper wasn't 100% or Michael Gallup was out of the lineup. But, you know, again, that's just how it goes. And the Saints defense looked extremely just perfect almost in a way. And they responded to the challenge. And the secondary play, I don't think we talk about Eli Apple enough. Yeah, he gets the penalties here and there. I don't think it's the best penalty that he gets called for, but Lattimore plays lights out. Eli Apple playing lights out. Von Bell is quickly playing himself into a big contract. And, hey, you get some plays from Marcus Williams. Anytime you don't have any bad plays, that's a good result. So pretty scary what we're seeing out of this defense right now.
Yeah, but it all starts, as you said, with their ability to stop the run. And Sheldon Rankin's coming back just helps that as he gets more and more in game shape. Boy, they're good against the run, man. I love that.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's great. I mean, Rankins is a huge boost. And I was curious because, you know, Mario Edwards Jr. was a scratch for that game, and I was wondering about how that was all going to play out. And, you know, Rankins told us after the game that, hey, this has always been the target date. He said he probably could have came back week one because of how he was progressing. And, I mean, he was critical of himself, but, you know, it's a refreshing thought that they're getting some of these guys back, and I really feel like, you know, going forward, he's going to be one of those missing pieces that's going to make this defense so much better and really can play some lights out, pick up some extra wins.
You're going for another win against Tampa Bay as we wrap things up?
I think so. I mean, look, you know, I think they got a sour taste in their mouth from last year in the Dome, and you know, again, division rival, you know how it's going to be, and I feel like this could be Bridgewater's coming out party, so to speak, if you will, and he's going to probably set the world on fire a little bit and at least look better than what he has. And I'm picking the Saints, probably going to trade a little bit more, so I'm picking like a lower score, probably like a 28 to 20, something like that.
We'll take it and run. John Hendricks, Forbes Sports, Canal Street Chronicles. Thank you so much. We always look forward to talking to you each and every Wednesday. We'll do it again next time. Thank you, my friend.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
I brought to you by ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets. We've got our stores all filled up with great Louisiana products, clean, neat restrooms, beverages of every type. And so much more. So whether you need fuel, a fill-up, a hot meal, we've got it for you at our 60 ShopRite Tobacco Plus outlets in southern and central Louisiana. We want you to leave with a smile on your face when you go to ShopRite and Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets. We'll be back. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show.
Guess what day it is?
It's time to break down the biggest storylines in college football this week with Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. What's up, Michael?
Mike. What day is it, Mike? Hump day!
Nothing to get hump day right, but to talk to Michael Huguenin of The Athletic, our college football guru. And Michael, good afternoon, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing quite well.
I've got to take you back 9 years ago today, one of the wildest Les Miles games in the history of college football. It was LSU versus Tennessee. LSU doesn't spike the ball. They're letting the clock wind down. There's a snap from the center. Jordan Jefferson's not looking for it. There's a mad scramble. Time runs out. Derek Dooley thinks he's got a win. But in the meantime, and getting ready for that last play, they sub players in and out. It's crazy. They end up having 13 players on the field. LSU gets one last untimed down. Stephen Ridley scores. LSU wins. Les Miles just kind of summed up his career with clock management. I can't believe it was 9 years ago, but I can remember it so vividly.
Yeah, I remember that game. Yeah, and that was just further abuse, frankly, heaped on the Tennessee program in the past decade.
Yes.
But, yeah, Miles obviously now gone. And interesting, he plays Oklahoma this weekend as the Kansas coach, and there's a lot
yep.
of Oklahoma fans who do not like him because of how brash he was at Oklahoma State before he went to LSU.
Yep.
So, yeah, there's a couple fan bases that don't like Les Miles.
They may unleash Jalen Hurts, and it could get ugly on that
yes.
one.
Yeah.
Well, you know, what was your biggest takeaway from last week? Ohio State sure looked good.
Yeah, Ohio State did look good, and I watch them every week because I deal with the Ohio State writer. There is no team in this country with more defensive team speed than Ohio State. Chase Young is the best defensive end in the nation. Jeffrey Okuda is one of the best corners, and if you go by early returns on the NFL draft, or early projections, rather, for the NFL draft, Young and Okuda both considered top five picks. They're on the same defense. That's pretty impressive. They have a lot of kids who were from the Southeast on that defense. Okuda's a Texas kid. They have two corners who are from Florida. These guys can all run. And Justin Fields is playing at a high level. J.K. Dobbins is a big-time running back. And they have the second-best receiving core in college football outside of Alabama. So there's a lot to like about Ohio State, and they are blowing teams out. You know, they're not scuffling around on one side of the ball. They're very sharp on both sides of the ball. And I know that, you know, Orgeron's not happy with some of his defensive effort. Nick Saban's not happy with some of his defensive effort.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's not an issue for Ohio State. They are just crushing people.
All right. I'm dying to hear your thoughts on LSU hosting Utah State. It's an 11 o'clock game in Tiger Stadium. LSU coming off of a bye week. They have been prolific offensively. Utah State's pretty good offensively as well. They're going from 50-degree temperature in Logan, Utah, to about 95-degree temperature in the at 10 o'clock their body clock time in Death Valley.
Yeah, there's no question but that LSU is going to win. The question is by how many points. But I will say the quarterback with the highest ceiling on the field is Utah State's Jordan Love. Talk to NFL scouts. They're in love with this guy. 6'4", 225, got a really big arm, pretty mobile. Obviously, the surrounding talent is not that great, but he is a really high-level player. Fun to watch. Sometimes takes a few too many chances because, well, he's got a really strong arm, and we all know strong-arm quarterbacks think they can do everything. And I also think that Jordan Love, when he plays against bigger schools, realizes he does need to try to do everything for his team to stay close. So it's going to be an interesting day for the LSU secondary. They will be tested. The LSU defensive front will be tested by Jordan Love. He is a really good, he's a really talented quarterback. But, yeah, again, LSU's offense should have its way with the Utah State defense.
It reminds me, Nick Saban was coaching at the time, and a team from Ohio came into Baton Rouge to play. They had a quarterback by the name of Ben Roethlisberger.
Ohio, exactly. And that's the kind of guy.
Yeah, kind of reminds me a lot of this. Big, strong-arm quarterback, just doesn't have enough of the other ancillary pieces to be competitive against a team like LSU.
No, that's exactly the case. I mean, Love, he is good. He's a kid from California, under-recruited. That's why he's at Utah State. And, again, I wouldn't be surprised if he throws two or three picks, but that's because he's going to try to do too much. But he is a very talented quarterback, and you're right, the surrounding talent, the ancillary talent, as you pointed out, is not close to being the same. But there's going to be, I imagine, there's going to be a couple plays during that game where he's going to make a big play, and LSU fans are going to go, wow, that dude's pretty good.
Yeah.
He is pretty good. I mean, again, he's a potential first-round pick because he is a 6'4", 225-pound quarterback with a big arm. And we all know NFL teams love those guys.
No question. Michael Huguenin of The Athletic, kind enough to join us. Very interesting. Kirk Ferentz and the Iowa Hawkeyes travel to Michigan. Jim Harbaugh's group after, as we said, you pick your score against Rutgers. They're so bad. But the Wolverines are favored by 4.5 in this one.
Yeah, and this is an interesting Iowa team. Iowa certainly is not a sexy team to watch. They're the same team every year. They want to run the ball. They want to run the ball between the tackles. They want to throw to their tight end. They want to use play action and hit some big plays. Defensively, there's nothing fancy about them either. They'll occasionally blitz. They pride themselves on their physicality. They have one of the best offensive linemen in the nation in Tristan Wirfs. It's a solid team. And Michigan did play well last week against Rutgers, but part of that, you're right, Rutgers is horrible. And it's interesting, Rutgers loses to Michigan and they decide to fire their coach. It's interesting that they decided to fire him after they lost to Michigan. Like, no one thought they were going to even stay close, but they fired him anyway, Chris Ash. But this is, you know, 2 weeks ago, Michigan looked horrible in losing to Wisconsin. This game, I would argue, is extremely important for Michigan to win. Yep. If they don't, you're looking at a Michigan team that, despite the second-best talent, maybe third, well, they're one of the three most talented teams in the league. And I would argue that they've already lost to Wisconsin. If they lose to Iowa, they ain't beating Ohio State, and I don't think they're going to beat Penn State. So that's at least four losses in a season in which they were projected to win the Big Ten and were preseason top ten.
Huh, interesting. TCU is at Iowa State. That's a kind of sneaky good ball game. Iowa State favored by 3.5.
Yeah, Iowa State has been a disappointment. They lost to Iowa, then they lost last week to Baylor, and I think people are like, well, Jason Campbell is overrated. Matt Campbell's overrated as a coach. His team never should have been picked to finish in the top 20. I think this might be a case of Iowa State is better when no one expects a lot of them. They had expectations this year, and they have not lived up to them. TCU coming off a beatdown of Kansas, but 2 weeks ago, TCU lost to SMU. So there's questions about both these teams, frankly. And this is an important pecking order game in the Big 12. Both still have a chance to finish second or third in the league. But I would argue you lose this one, you're not finishing that high in the Big 12.
He is Michael Huguenin of The Athletic, kind enough to join us as we talk about this week six of college football. Texas and West Virginia. Texas is favored by 11. Oh, West Virginia, so it's not the same anymore, are they?
No, and this is not a good team, and I think that's one reason Holgorsen left. And it's also one reason why West Virginia fans, who are not known for being rational, frankly, like a lot of fan bases, rational or patient, expressed a lot of patience when they hired Neil Brown, knowing that this was going to be a bad team. It's not nearly as bad as people thought. Neil Brown's a good coach. At the same time, if Texas plays its best, it's going to easily beat that spread. It is difficult getting to Morgantown if you're a Big 12 school. So the travel, Big 12 teams don't like to travel there. The crowd is raucous, it's loud, it's nasty. The weather presumably is going to be a little cooler than it is in Austin. But if Texas truly is ready to play, this is not a game they should sweat. Now, that said, they do have Oklahoma next week. Mm-hmm. So if Texas goes in and scuffles around thinking about next week's game, this could be interesting. But if Texas shows up ready for business, it won't be close.
Michael Huguenin of The Athletic, brought to you by Peterbilt of Louisiana. It's the envy of every truck driver. It's the dream to own a Peterbilt. It's a bad week in the SEC except for one game. But I'm curious, somebody's got to win between Vanderbilt at Ole Miss. Who is it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't think either team is that good. Ole Miss did play well 2 weeks ago against Cal. Cal's a really good defensive team, and Ole Miss moved the ball relatively well on them. So if they can move the ball on Cal, they should be able to move the ball on Vanderbilt. But I think Vanderbilt's going to have some success on the ground as well. I think this is a game that's going to be high 20s, low 30s. I think it'll be entertaining and close.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's not necessarily going to be good football teams, but I think these teams are evenly matched. So, yeah, I think it'll be a pretty close game. I have to admit, I have zero idea who's going to win this game. I think Ole Miss should win because they're at home. But, yeah, we're going to see. And I think both these coaches could use this win. Matt Luke's under heat, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And Derek Mason also was under some heat, and I'm not sure why. It's Vanderbilt.
Right.
I think James Franklin spoiled a portion of that fan base. But history doesn't lie for the most part, and Vanderbilt's football history is not a good one. So the idea that Vanderbilt should go, you know, they should be a bowl game every year, that's ludicrous. So I think Ole Miss probably wins because they're at home, but certainly would not be surprised if Vanderbilt wins.
I can feel the fear and the unknown for the Georgia Bulldogs because Jeremy Pruitt's not naming who his starting quarterback's going to be, as they'll be at Rocky Top as a 25-point underdog hosting Georgia. Wow.
Yeah, this should be a blowout. If Georgia is ready, I mean, Florida beat Tennessee by 31, and frankly should have beaten them by 41. So Tennessee is not good. And if they have thrown in the towel on the Jarrett Guarantano era, it's Brian Moore, a true freshman quarterback, who'd be making his first start against the top five teams. Tennessee is weak up front on both sides of the ball. Georgia should feast in this game. The air of mystery about who the UT starter is, I think there's an air of mystery because once that is known, there is zero mystery to how this game is going to play out.
All right, which leads us to the marquee matchup of the weekend, and that's Auburn at Florida. Florida has made this their homecoming game. Gus Malzahn said, isn't that interesting? Freshman quarterback Nick seems to be getting a little bit better. I think Florida's a little bit better with their backup quarterback Trask. What are the keys in this one, you think?
Well, one thing, as a Florida alum, I get a lot of they play an SEC school for homecoming every year. So
right.
if Malzahn's using that to rile up his team, that's sort of ridiculous. But Auburn's strength is its defensive line. And if you watch Florida play, their offensive line can't run block. And if you can't run block against Kentucky, you ain't going to run block against Auburn. So Mullen's going to have to scheme around some things to make sure Trask stays upright. Florida does have very good receivers. It's a very deep group, and they have a really – this kid's going to be elite tight end, Kyle Pitts. If Trask can get them the ball in space, they can make some things happen. The Auburn running game is very good. The Auburn passing game is mediocre. So, obviously, you try to load up the box and stop the run. Oregon did that to an extent, but they're really the only team that's been able to do that. So, Florida has not been at full health with its defense all year. It will be Saturday. But the weakness of Florida's defense is their defensive tackles. So, if Auburn runs up the middle effectively, they're going to win this game. I think Auburn's going to win the game. I think it'll be close. I think it'll be entertaining, but I do think Auburn wins.
Which leads us to our weekly question. From what you've seen, how do you rank the top four teams in the country to date?
I think I would have Ohio State number one, Alabama two, probably Oklahoma three. I'm not sure who four is. Clemson has not impressed me. Trevor Lawrence has not made the expected jump. Now, granted, we're just into the first week of October, and he can obviously get a heck of a lot better as the season progresses. But, you know, last week, every year they seem to have a game where they, oh, my God, they could lose this. Mm-hmm. And last, North Carolina is not good and had a chance to beat them. At least last year they almost lost to Syracuse. Syracuse won 10. This North Carolina team I don't think is going to even get to a bowl game. So I think Clemson's biggest opponent the rest of its schedule is itself. And I get the fact that it's hard to get up for 12 games in a season, especially when the bulk of your games are against bad opponents. And the ACC is bad. The ACC is easily the worst of the Power 5 leagues. Easily. The Pac-12 top to bottom blows away the ACC. Take away Clemson and the ACC is not good. So I don't think Clemson's top four in terms of what they've shown on the field. I think Oklahoma would be considered. I think LSU would be considered. I think Auburn would be considered. But Clemson obviously is extremely talented. They're going to be unbeaten. So I think they're going to be in the playoff. But the what they've shown so far on the field, they don't belong in the top four.
It cracks me up that Mac Brown went for two. And I like it.
I would.
Yeah, I didn't like the play, but it just goes to show me.
Exactly. What are you doing running an option with a quarterback who is lighting up the Clemson secondary? And I get the fact that there's not a lot of space to run patterns when you're on the 3-yard line going for two. But, and I would have gone for two because you got all the momentum. They are immensely more talented than you are.
Right.
You got the crowd behind you. You're at home. I would have gone for two, but I would not have made that play call. And I, you know, the offensive coordinator is Phil Longo, who had been at Ole Miss. And my presumption is a lot of Ole Miss fans are going, well, Phil Longo in the red zone is a nightmare, and it was a horrible play call.
I just wonder if Mac Brown 20 years earlier would have gone for two. What are they going to do to Mac Brown? He's in his 70s. Well, are they going to fire him? I mean,
true.
Come on.
That's true. But I still think it was a good decision, just a bad play.
Absolutely. Any other sneaky good games this weekend that you're
eye
on?
I think Cal Oregon could be interesting. The Cal quarterback, evidently though, is not going to play, which removes because Cal's offense is bad as it is, and without Chase Garbers, it's beyond bad. UCF Cincinnati on Friday night. Cincinnati might be the second-best AAC team. If they're not the second-best, they're the third or fourth-best. This is a tough road game for UCF. The Friday night game, Cincinnati has changed. It's got a cool-looking field. The grass is going to be black. Obviously, it's artificial turf. It looks pretty cool. They're expecting a sellout crowd. So the last time UCF won the road, they lost to Pitt. Now, Cincinnati and Pitt, I would argue, aren't that different. So I think that could be a very interesting game. Also interesting, Virginia Tech at Miami. Justin Fuente looked like a home run hire at Virginia Tech. His team has gotten blew their doors in last week in Blacksburg. Yeah. And there's a lot of chatter that Virginia Tech needs to move on. The problem is he has a gigantic buyout. And as everybody knows, gigantic buyouts sometimes lead to a coach staying longer than he should. And this Miami team is certainly no great shakes. And I'll be honest, if Virginia Tech beats Miami at Miami, you're going to have that fan base in Miami going, Manny Diaz is not good, and nobody's going to show up the rest of the season.
He is Michael Hugan of The Athletic. You're the best, man. Can't wait to talk to you next week. Enjoy the weekend.
Thanks, guys. See you.
All right. That's brought to you by Peterbilt of Louisiana with offices in Lafayette, Lake Charles, Baton Rouge, and New Orleans. It's the best of the best, the most comfortable, the most reliable, the most dependable. The best resale value is a Peterbilt truck. We'll be back with more of the Jordy Helpert Show after this. We welcome you back. DC's Little Capital X on I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. It's my go-to stop, and it's talks. It brings you today's event in history, October 2nd, 1978. Bucky Dent, three-run home run, helped the New York Yankees win the AL East Division tiebreaker game versus the Boston Red Sox after trailing by 14 games. Bucky Dent, Red Sox heartbreaker on this day, October 2nd, 1978. If today's your birthday, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. You share your birthday with former LSU football player Craig Buster Davis. And great picture in Alex Lang. Yeah, special thanks to all of our guests today, Chris Truax, John Hendricks, Michael Huguenin, and particularly Will Harris of the Houston Astros. Tomorrow we'll have our Football Friday on a Thursday, the Nickel Report, Jordy and the Judge, and so much more. So come on back, same time, 2 to 4, same great station, 103.7 The Game. Until then, I'm Jordy Helpert. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.